I am here with Andy and Amy Dudas. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it. I start all the interviews talking about where you were born, where you grew up, and kind of early life for both of you. So.
Okay, I'll start. I was born in Fort Worth, Texas. I lived there for 2 years, and my family moved to Stillwater, Oklahoma, when I was two, and stayed there until I was about 12, at which time my family moved to College Station, Texas, for 3 years until I was 16. Yeah, and then when I was 16, my family moved to Terre Haute, Indiana. So I finished high school. So I was there for 3 years and finished high school in Terre Haute and then went to Earlham here in Richmond. And I've been here for 28 years now.
Were you a good mover
as a kid? No. Well, as a little kid, I was. I don't remember when I was two, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I was 16, no, I was a terrible mover. As a lot of people are aware, when you're a Texan, that is your identity.
Mm-hmm.
And moving away from Texas as a Texan at 16 was, and especially to Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
What the heck is in Indiana?
Mm-hmm.
No, I was incredibly unpleasant about it. I'm sure. I mean, it didn't affect, I was a great student and I did fine, but it was a tough transition. It's a tough age to move. It was a tough transition. I turned out okay, I think. So
I mean, we all like you, so
yeah.
Right.
kind of
knocked off the dirt and we're good.
Right, yeah. Right. So, but it wasn't a happy time for me. And I'll acknowledge I have very few memories of that time in my life,
mm-hmm.
just because I think I was so committed to not being happy there.
Is there anything redeeming about Terre Haute that you do remember that you liked?
You know, Terre Haute is a fine community, and I'm not going to badmouth it, do I go there voluntarily? No,
yeah.
I do not.
Just didn't develop a connection with it.
It's just a bad memory, and not because
mm-hmm.
it was Terre Haute, just because of the circumstances.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
Andy, you grew up in Richmond, right?
I did.
Okay.
But there's a little bit of history there for, mm-hmm. for that to play out. Before I was born, my dad was working at the Wayne Works Bus Factory.
Mm.
I take that back. He wasn't at the Wayne Works Bus Factory. I've got my own story out of line.
Well, I already wrote it down, so I'm sorry. You
change
your story.
He's already dead and gone. So
okay,
all right.
No,
Dad
I'll
was working
it.
For the water company.
Okay.
And Dad got transferred to Ashtabula, Ohio, while my mom was pregnant with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was born in Ashtabula, Ohio, set the record for the largest baby ever born at General Hospital, of all places. Yep, 10 pounds, 5 ounces.
Oh, my Lord.
And I wasn't even the biggest one in the family.
No.
I had another brother, my brother Nick, who
mm-hmm.
you might know.
I knew Nick, yeah.
Nick weighed 11.7.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
You
and he's a little
terrible
guy.
Children.
And Nick, and Nick is smaller
yeah.
than me as an
yeah.
adult. He's a little kid, a little
oh
guy.
God.
But so before, it ended up not working out. They were just too far away from family, and they hated it. So, and we lived like 5 blocks from Lake Erie. You talk about a bad winter,
mm-hmm.
move 5 blocks from Lake Erie.
Mm-hmm.
So, Don King is from Ashtabula, Ohio, too, by the way. I always said when I was in high school that used to explain the hairdo on me, not him.
Yeah, not him.
So, before I was 2 years old, we moved back to Richmond with no job. This was back in the days of one income, one automobile families,
mm-hmm.
and I was already the fourth child in the family with
mm-hmm.
two more still to come. So Dad then went to work at Wayne Works at the school bus factory, and Dad ended up there for 25 years almost,
mm-hmm.
right until the time when the business started kind of petering out, and eventually they closed the doors, but
mm-hmm.
he was one of the last to go. So virtually, I have no memory of ever living anywhere
mm-hmm.
outside of Richmond. There was a portion of my life where I was in the county for just a handful of years, but
mm-hmm.
always identify with Richmond as where I was born, even
That's
though
right.
technically I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
Graduated from Richmond High School,
mm-hmm.
was not a good student, but I graduated from Richmond High School on time.
So you then, Amy, you landed at Earlham. That's how did you find Earlham? Earlham's not easy to find.
You know, as a good student, you get college mailings from everywhere.
I wouldn't know.
Okay. So,
you're in the minority.
I actually had a dresser drawer that I emptied out, and I put all of the college mailings in. I do remember that from being in Terre Haute. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I think I just got a mailing. I have very few memories of that time in my life, so I'm not sure how Earlham crossed my path. Mm-hmm. But I assume I got a mailer or something. And, mm-hmm. You know, I actually only applied to two schools, and I think I was really concerned about application fees. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my family was middle class, probably upper middle class. My father is a retired college professor. My mother was working at a non-for-profit as a marketing person. So it's not that we were mm-hmm. struggling in any way. But I remember being very conscious of how much the application fees were. Mm-hmm. There were a lot, and mm-hmm. I'm sure there are a lot more now. Mm-hmm. So I applied to Earlham, and I applied to IU. Inexplicably, two completely different experiences. So, you know, I had a lot of other interests, but for some reason I just ended up with those two. So Earlham was a very good fit for me. I needed a smaller environment. I needed a non-Greek system. Mm-hmm. Not having a Greek system in place was really important to me. So, you know, that's kind of how, and I think Earlham was far enough away, but not too far away from mm-hmm. home, even though I wouldn't have admitted that I was intimidated to go too far from home. Mm-hmm. It was a good enough fit, and it was the type of situation where it was easy to get back if I needed to, but not too close where it would be too easy to get back, I guess.
What was your parents' thought about Earlham?
They loved it, and they continue to just love what it did for me. Mm-hmm. They were completely on board. We managed to get, I think I ended up going there for the same cost that it would have been at IU, just mm-hmm. because Earlham has such an amazing financial aid system there. So the cost wasn't really an issue, and they always kind of told me, we'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's one of these crazy expensive colleges like Earlham is, mm-hmm. we'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. And so we did, and that's how it ended up. It was a great experience.
Yeah. If I may interject here mm-hmm.
okay.
and ask a question, because your father, being mm-hmm. a professor uh-huh. at Indiana State,
right.
I'm assuming there would have been some sort of a tuition discount
I was just gonna
for
ask
you
that.
To mm-hmm. have attended there. So
I don't know.
When you say you were a little apprehensive maybe to go too far from home for school, it seems like I'm guessing there would have been an option, a very much more financially appealing.
Should we remind your parents of this?
Probably not. It was never, my recollection is ISU was never even a consideration.
Really?
And it may have been because it was too close, you know, that there was some value in the experience of life mm-hmm. to leave yep. home and have that college experience. Mm-hmm. ISU would have been too close, and it would have been too easy to go home every weekend, mm-hmm. which I think is a terrible idea for college students. But mm-hmm.
That's part of growing up.
Yeah, it's part of it. Right. So I think that's it. It was never even they. I don't recall that even being. Mm-hmm. on the table.
Yeah.
So
you both have done, I think, a very good job of making Richmond very much a home mm-hmm. and
yeah,
a place
absolutely.
that you want to stay. Tell me about what are the parts of Richmond that make you feel like you've chosen correctly? What do you love about it?
Well, for me, because I've grown up here, to be completely detached from it, it's or from that quote, to take emotion out of that mm-hmm. out of this answer, I don't know that I can fairly compare it to anything else because mm-hmm. this is all that I've known.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, it's not like it's oh God, I have to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that I became an adult until I was well into my 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Many people would attest to that besides myself. But as I have become the adult that I think I'm doing okay mm-hmm. with being, it's the opportunities artistically within mm-hmm. this community for being a town of around 35,000 people to have a professional symphony orchestra, to have a volunteer orchestra, to have a pretty strong, vibrant community theater. There are, and you always run the risk of leaving too many people out when you start making a list of things that are great, so mm-hmm. I'm going to stop right there. So everybody's awesome.
Everybody's great, and I love you all. Yes.
Well, everything is hurt, and I'm dying.
Let's stay on the arts for just a second, because were you both involved in arts before you were really involved? I mean, right now you're really involved in arts, but were you raised to be involved in arts? Was that a major or anything?
Like yeah, that? Well, I think that's a good topic, because we're both so different. I grew up with music all around me all the time. I started taking piano lessons when I was 4. I started taking flute lessons. I can't remember when, but I know it was before the age of 10. My father is a very good musician. He played piano, he played guitar, he sings. He was always singing and playing guitar. My dad was active in the community theater in Stillwater, Oklahoma when we were there. So unfortunately, while my mother has many strengths, music is not one of them. So all of it came from my dad's side. But she was very supportive, mm-hmm. incredibly supportive of all of those efforts. So
she's a handy photographer, though.
She's a handy photographer. So mm-hmm. as far as the arts go, she's certainly got an eye for that. But mm-hmm. so, and they were so supportive. For example, I mean, I started taking, and you know, as a child, the younger you start something, the better you are mm-hmm. at it. And while there may have been some natural knack for it and some, you know, just some DNA there, because I started playing flute so young, I was extremely advanced for my age. Mm-hmm. And for one, you pick it up better when you're younger. Mm-hmm. So when I got to the point where all the other kids were playing instruments like the flute, mm-hmm. none of them could touch me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, you know, when I was in the 6th grade, I was in the 7th grade band. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I mean, so it was... There was all that kind of advanced just opportunities for me as mm-hmm. far as that goes. And so once we got, and I was also, I'll admit, I was very snobbish about the types of music I would play. So I was very clearly a classically trained flutist and, you know, wouldn't do anything but that.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got to high school and we had moved to after we moved to Terre Haute and we were looking at high schools, there's 2 high schools in Terre Haute,
mm-hmm.
I refused to be in marching band. Mm-hmm. That was below my...
Really?
Yeah, I would not do it because I just felt like musically it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
So I made it clear to my parents, if I have to be in marching band, mm-hmm. I'm not going to be in it. I'm just not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So Terre Haute South High School had a requirement. If you're in band, you have to be in marching band. Terre Haute North did not. My parents purposefully made sure we were in the Terre Haute North school district so that I would play in.
You were a stubborn little thing, huh?
Oh, does that surprise you at all?
So, strong-minded.
Does stubborn mean get your own way?
Yeah. Get your own way.
Okay.
I get what I want.
And you're not an only child. You've got
I have a sister,
siblings,
right.
So
and
you know,
same thing.
Yeah.
They were, my parents encouraged us to do
mm-hmm.
anything and everything we wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So if we wanted to try something, they were always... Very encouraging of that.
Yeah.
So music has been
yeah.
a part of my life, and theater a little bit, not quite so much, but music has been a part of my life since
mm-hmm.
since before I can remember. So
Andy, were you in art
well,
before?
Well, this is about the only difference that Amy and I have in each other.
Mm-hmm.
I love marching band.
Yeah.
It was, I didn't know it until I got into high school how much I was going to love it,
mm-hmm.
but my family... There were, like I was saying before, there's 6 kids. It was one income. And we did okay financially, but we were more towards the lower end of middle class.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't as much money to go around for each kid.
Mm-hmm.
But I was the 4th kid in. And it, to be fair to my older 3 siblings, my oldest brother, Eric, is the smartest one, at least academically. Let's be fair to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
There are life skills that
mm-hmm.
can't be tracked with grade
mm-hmm.
letters. But by the time the DNA trickled down to me, I don't know how much was left. Even though technically my brother Eric is adopted. So either one way or the other, he took the lion's share of the brains.
Mm-hmm.
But I was the first kid in the family to partake of the music program within Richmond Community Schools. Mm-hmm. And we all started back then, this was in the late 70s, early 80s, with the flutophone. Mm-hmm. I don't know if a flutophone recorder is the mm-hmm. exact same thing, but it was not a recorder, it was a flutophone. Mm-hmm. But because we didn't have as many financial opportunities as maybe we would have liked, we didn't take a family vacation. Mm-hmm. You don't take 8 people to Kings Island for mm-hmm. one day when money's tight. Mm-hmm. So our one vacation a year was we leave in at like 5:30 in the morning to go to State Fair Band Day mm-hmm. and get home at like 1 because we didn't have enough money to buy the tickets to get into the evening performance. So mm-hmm. we had to stand like the people in an old Bugs Bunny cartoon peeking through the fence.
The little holes.
So, and it was, as a kid, you don't know, and that's all that we knew. So that was the day of the year. But for whatever reason, Mom and Dad got, even though they had no marching band or musical experience in their past, for whatever reason, they latched on to the marching band thing every year. And they went mm-hmm. every single year.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden, I was playing an instrument. And by the time I played trombone from 7th grade on, and I wasn't a good trombone player, much like my homework. I neglected it, mm-hmm. but I had fun with it. Mm-hmm. And by the time I got to high school, that was where the marching band really took effect. Everything else was sit-down concert music. Mm-hmm. But I got to spend 4 years with Stephen Varnell as the head director.
Oh,
of the
band. I remember him.
And this community will forever be looking for the next one.
Yeah,
no disrespect to anyone who's held that job since, but those are shoes that are never going to be filled.
He was a legend.
And he took over from a legend with John Parshall. Mm-hmm. So we were very successful as far as marching band success accolades went. But as I've gotten older, I have found out how much of an impact Mr. Varnell had on me mm-hmm. because he had a knack for putting a show together. He had a knack for entertaining people beyond just a bunch of kids marching around like a bunch of dorks. Mm-hmm. We played popular music, well-known music. So one way or the other, people knew what we were doing. And we had a blast. But so that was up to high school. Graduate high school, I never had anything more to do with music. Mm-hmm. But it planted a seed mm-hmm. in me that was just germinating for years mm-hmm. in one way or the other. I eventually, 13, 14 years later, got involved at Richmond Civic Theater. Mm-hmm. And that then became a vocal thing for me, where I never had any training or background with any vocals. But David Cobine, the director, and Mindy Deckard, the music director, they took a chance on me mm-hmm. for the role of Judd Fry in Oklahoma, and it went really, really well. Mm-hmm. And it's become one of the only things I want to do now. Mm-hmm. So that's a long answer to a very short question.
It was a good answer. It was a great answer.
Good answer.
So the art piece has clearly attracted you all to the community and mm-hmm. partially made you want to kind of stick here. But what are the other pieces that make you want to stay around?
Well, from a practical standpoint, the cost of living here is incredibly low.
Yeah.
My sister and brother-in-law were in for a visit, their first visit, I don't know, a couple of years ago. And, you know, they live in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And at one point, you know, we have a beautiful home. We love our home, and it's really big. Mm-hmm. It's too big. It's ridiculously big. But my brother-in-law, finally, he said, "Do you mind if I ask how much this cost you?" And I told him, and his reaction was, just, you know, because their rent payment for probably, you know, 1,000 square feet is more than my mortgage, you know? So it's just the comparison. Obviously, we don't have the amenities of a big city, but we're close enough mm-hmm. to make it easy to do. So mm-hmm. the location is great because we can get to so many different places from here by car. The cost of living is low. The community itself is, and of course, I've never lived anywhere else as an adult. So, you know, it's hard to compare, but I find the Richmond community to be, I believe it's unique in terms of how positive it is and how supportive people are of each other and of doing good things. Mm-hmm. And that, I can't imagine that there are a lot of other communities like that. And I think that's important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the size of the city helps that too.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. once the population starts to grow to really, really large numbers, especially to six-digit numbers, it's really easy to get lost in the shuffle
mm-hmm.
and lose
right.
those personal connections from one community to the next.
Absolutely.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You all, you just touched on kind of what I wanted to ask next, which is doing good things. You all are very involved in philanthropy and have been forever. And Amy, I think you said something on Facebook a long time ago that was so funny. I can't remember what it was, but the exact quote was, I won't get, but it was something like, okay, I need the nonprofits to stop calling for a while so I can make more money to give back to you. And I laughed for an hour after reading that, and I thought, I love that, because I feel that way too. I mean,
yeah.
feel like, well, gosh, I wish I could make more money so I could give it away.
Yeah.
And I don't think everybody thinks that.
Right.
And I appreciate that you do think that way. But talk about the kind of that attitude in Richmond.
There are a lot of people with that attitude in Richmond. I think that's what's so great about it. But it's true. You tend to put yourself out there, and there's so much to get involved with here that is rewarding and beneficial that I just keep saying yes to things. And there are projects, and of course that, you know, you get this, well, Amy will do it. You know,
mm-hmm.
ask Amy. And so, you know, then you get to a point of where, you know, and sometimes it's just because, you know, you'll go weeks and you won't have a whole lot to do on the volunteer front, and
mm-hmm.
it's all good. But then all of a sudden, you've got five organizations that say, we need this right now. And
mm-hmm.
you get to the point of, you have to understand that I need some time
mm-hmm.
to earn my living so
yeah.
that I can give back to you. So,
right.
it can get a little overwhelming sometimes because so many of us do say yes so often.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's an important component of what Richmond is and what the community, the identity of this community.
Why is that? Is it from
know.
Our founders? Is it from we just watch others do it, so you just assume you have to? I don't know.
I mean, I could speculate that some of that goes back to our Quaker history.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we do have such a rich ancestry of the Quaker tradition
mm-hmm.
that creates that spirit of service and philanthropy,
mm-hmm.
And that just kind of that ekes out in lots of small ways that I think a lot of people don't realize
mm-hmm.
how much that's touched us over the years.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that may be a big part of it. I'm speculating,
yeah.
but that's,
yeah,
that makes some sense to me.
It's interesting. I wonder if people know much about our Quaker heritage. I mean, there's so many people that have lived here forever and have no idea that it was
right.
founded by Quakers.
Right.
Or, yeah.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit of everywhere. I mean, I remember once I was doing, well, I was working on our bylaws for our nonprofit, DIVA, and I know that there are other organizations in the community that have in their bylaws decision-making by consensus.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a friend, colleague in Indianapolis who does a lot of business organization type work, and so I just reached out to him to say, hey, you know, I'd be interested, or actually reached out to kind of a professional, like a list sort of kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
Asking about this particular issue, you know, does anybody have any, you know, experience with this, any,
mm-hmm.
you know, that sort of thing. And overall, the responses I got were, why would you want to do that?
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it would work.
Uh-huh.
And so my response was, well, in fact, there are a couple or several organizations in Richmond that actually have that in their bylaws.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, so it's interesting that even just beyond our borders or beyond Richmond's boundaries
mm-hmm.
throughout the state of Indiana, you know, that kind
it's
of
unheard of.
It's just unheard of.
Yeah.
But I think it trickles out
mm-hmm.
in ways that people don't realize.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
My husband always thought it's funny that we all call each other by first names
uh-huh.
in Richmond. And
uh-huh.
I called many of my adult, you know, my when I was a kid, my friends' parents we called by first names.
Right.
I mean, it was just kind of assumed, and
uh-huh.
that seems to be a very Quakerly
thing.
It's
a very Quaker
thing. I wonder if
yeah.
it makes us more welcoming as a community.
That could be.
I don't know.
That could
it
be.
Seems to.
Yeah,
it may.
I think
yeah.
so.
Huh.
Yeah.
So let's go on to DIVA, because it's a really cool
okay.
project.
Yeah.
I like that.
We never tire of
talking. I'm sure you don't.
tire of talking about it or hearing that it's a very cool project.
Well, it's cool, and it's been fun to kind of just watch from the perimeter
yeah.
how this is developing. So where did this come from?
Well, our combined interests and love of music and theater and just the arts in general. One way or the other, the universe brought us together and allowed us the opportunity to start. What's missing? What opportunities are there in not in Richmond for artists of any kind? And it was originally born out of, you know, just what are our interests? What do we want to be in and like to be involved in? But beyond that, we were able to figure out this doesn't have to or shouldn't just be about us. Mm-hmm. And so from there, we started expanding on the idea of what more can we do with this? How can we make this a community space, a community, what?
Community space?
A community thing, yeah. And so we started looking for a property in downtown Richmond. Mm-hmm. That would serve two purposes. One, to move the law firm to that, but also had the capability, the physical space to house some sort of an area for performance art and exhibitions of art. And we eventually landed on a pretty unique space.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the rest is history.
So how'd you come up with the name?
Oh, we brainstormed, and this is what we do. I mean, Andy and I spend very little time apart,
mm-hmm.
And that is how we like it. Mm-hmm. We just click.
Mm-hmm.
And so we brainstormed anything that started with a D,
mm-hmm.
and just kept going and going, and we were trying to find something short that was a word, mm-hmm. The letters would also work. So I can't believe how long it took us to get to the word diva from letters that start with D that are related to the arts. But then we finally got there, and, you know, obviously it's a venue, so to use venue, and then you're inspired by art. So the Dudas Inspiration Venue for the Arts, it worked. But it actually took us a while to get there. And mm-hmm. we were on, you know, Merriam-Webster Online, the Thesaurus, and all this kind of stuff.
Four-letter D words.
Yeah, and
or
just...
five-letter, you know, three and four and five-letter words that start with D. And
did
it's
you
like
get some disturbing ones when you were...
We actually did.
Well, the thing that we had to be careful, we wanted to make sure that we were in charge of the acronym.
Yeah.
You know, so the one joke that I used was we didn't want to be known, and I will leave anyone who's listening to this to come up with their own acronym.
Yeah.
We didn't want to be known for the Dudas Bureau for Arts and Gathering.
Right. Right.
So we had to be, so we didn't want anybody to come up with a negative twist on it.
Yeah, right.
Because there's always going to be some haters out there
for
just because haters are going to hate.
Yeah.
So, but
I feel
once,
like we need background music now.
Right, yeah, exactly.
But once we got there, it was kind of like, it was that, why did it take us this long to figure this out?
That's so funny.
Right. But I think, we had been talking about this concept forever. And mm-hmm. it's just born out of the stream of consciousness conversation that it was always going on between mm-hmm. the two of us. And so it's just this organic process where we got to this. And the idea was, because I think we had some things that we would have liked to do with various arts organizations,
mm-hmm.
and because of the limitations of some of those, just by nature of, you know, well, we can't do that because it's too controversial, or we can't do this because it wouldn't bring in a big enough audience. Mm-hmm.
Or just because of their own internal schedules.
Right, mm-hmm. exactly. And so the idea is, where would there be a space where somebody could do whatever they wanted, regardless of the fact that maybe only one person will come see it.
Mm-hmm.
This is that type of space.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wanted to turn the energy that we draw off each other into something that would benefit the community as a whole. And so we just poured it into that. And so that's, you know, that's kind of how it was born, and then what it morphed into as far as, you know, if somebody wants to do whatever,
mm-hmm.
we want them to have a space. Now, obviously, the whatever will have to be able to be done in the space that we have with the equipment that we have, which right now is
not much.
One table and some chairs and a little bit of staging. But we're working on that. But, you know, I mean, so that's the idea, is that the space is just a wide open, empty space, but there's stuff there that you can move around. Everything's portable, and to do and create any kind of art form, which we want to expand. You know, what is art? It can be anything you want. If you create it, if it inspires you, then it's art. So that's...
So give me, if you could look 10 years in the future, give me the weekend schedule for that art space.
Boy, it can look like anything.
Well,
you
that's
know?
A cop out answer. I want you to tell me. I would love for the poster to read this.
Okay, well, in 10 years we will have an elevator that takes us up to the third floor of our building, because right now we're in an interim space that's downstairs.
Okay.
But for that elevator to, I mean, the goal of the elevator is to make it, our space is always going to be accessible to as many people as we possibly can. So we will not be upstairs until we get the elevator. But, you know, you're going to take the elevator, because our current space will then act as an elevator lobby that will take you up to the third floor, that then has plenty of nice accessible restrooms and a little kitchen and bar area and a 3,000 square foot performance space with no beams. It's completely unobstructed. And then maybe we have a little improv show for about an hour and a half, and then afterwards you can have drinks out on the deck that's facing Elstro Plaza, and then we've got some maybe past their prime late 80s, early 90s rock band that's given a little concert over in Elstro.
And then the next day there would be a poetry slam that would be put on by... an individual who just knows a lot of people that like to recite poetry. And, you know, then that night it might be somebody...
A chamber concert.
A chamber concert.
I like this game.
The following day, it's an art exhibit of somebody that wanted to display their original works. And, you know, maybe the next weekend it's somebody that wants to do a kind of a TED Talk. You know, or it could be somebody doing performance art, or it could be some guy that stands in the middle of the room silent for an hour because his message is silence is golden.
Right.
But byproduct of this, that weekend in the future, plenty of good accessible parking in downtown Richmond. That's what I see happening.
Yep. Yes.
And that no one's complaining about it.
Yes, yes. You said something funny, which I never think about. You said there will be no beams. I would never in a million years have thought of that. So how are you thinking through envisioning this space when you both have the interest and the experience, but not really formal training on how to set something like this up? Like, I would never have thought of that. I would...
Well, the space itself already has no beams.
Cool.
I mean, it is
it was a ballroom.
It was a ballroom.
Okay.
So it's on the third floor. It's about 3,000 square feet, and there's no support. There's no, I mean, it's
nothing
just
to
wide
obstruct
open.
A view of any
right.
audience.
Right.
It's
right.
wide
that was my
open.
Yeah.
So the idea is it's big enough, and what we plan to do is accumulate portable walls, portable seating, which we already have a lot of that. And so if the space is for an audience of 20 people and a small stage, then that's what it's going to look like when you walk in. You can make it look however you need to. I mean, or the staging will be in sections. So if you want to have a drag show, fashion performance.
At a place called Diva that seems like a no-brainer.
It does seem like it. I feel like that needs to be on the agenda.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You can do that. So the staging will be set up so it could be a runway. It could be theater in the round. It could be... just against the wall staging, and it's high enough where we could eventually, and I think pie in the sky 10 years from now, we could install a fly system so that, you know, curtains and all that kind of thing for theatrical performances could also be installed and used as well. So
it's because it's like, it's almost 60 feet in each direction, and once we get rid of the drop ceiling, it's almost a 20-foot ceiling.
Wow.
So the place is gigantic.
Yeah.
But once we get upstairs, and these are things, you know, for smarter people than I to get figured out down the road as far as how capacity, but just to, we're talking, if the need and the desire and the the want is there. Mm-hmm. You're talking room for 200 to 300 people as an audience.
But it doesn't have to be.
But it doesn't have to be.
Yeah. If you have an audience of one.
Because everything is portable. We're not going to set up 200 chairs when we expect less than 50 because there's nothing sadder as a performer than to come out and see 150 empty seats.
Yeah, right, right.
I've been there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think that that's so smart of you to think of, because that's another, I think, great thing about Richmond is we're always kind of thinking of how that person feels. How does that person feel about that? Let's try to make them feel welcome and comfortable. And,
right.
I love that approach. Yeah. That's really great.
Well, that's something that we try to do as much as possible, mm-hmm. where it's giving everyone a place at the table,
mm-hmm.
regardless of anything.
And we want to remove any barrier that someone might have to creating art, whether that's financial, whether it's physical, whether it's just a mental block that I don't think I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
We want to remove all of those barriers for people. And so, you know, that's why if you want to use the space just to put on a production of Waiting for Godot,
mm-hmm.
You can use the space so long as you don't charge your audience. Mm-hmm. You don't pay us. You know, you come in, you produce your play.
Mm-hmm.
If you have one person in the audience, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You've at least been able to have the experience of creating art.
That's so neat.
Yeah.
I love that.
Donations are happily accepted.
Yeah, donations are accepted.
Right.
And you have formed a formal nonprofit for
We are a 501c3.
Yeah. Great.
Yes.
Great. Yeah. So I love what you're doing there. That's incredible. One thing that I wanted to touch on, too, is that you were able to convince your parents to move here to Richmond, and they have quickly integrated themselves into this community faster than I think I've known anyone to do so.
Right.
What's their secret? Because there are a lot of people. Richmond is starting to see some people move back and some people, you know, new people move in, and it's getting kind of a cooler vibe right now. So
yeah. Yeah.
What's their secret?
I don't know. And I think that, I mean, they're retired, so they're, you know, they've got a lot of time on their hands, but that, you know, there are a lot of retired people that sit in their homes and watch TV all day long.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not who my parents are. I mean, and I think probably a fair amount of the joke I make about my parents is that because they always encouraged me, they always made it clear to me, I can be whatever I want to be, I can do whatever I want to do, mm-hmm. and as a result, I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. Because if I get in my head that I want to try something, mm-hmm. I try it,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't care. So I think that they instilled that in me, and that's just who they are. Mm-hmm. They've always been active in things that interest them, not only their vocation, but they had hobbies, they, you know,
mm-hmm.
sports and music and whatever. I mean, it was just, I don't know.
And they were in the Virgin Islands, right?
They were. So when they retired from Terre Haute,
mm-hmm.
they spent 5 years, they fell in love with St. John.
Mm-hmm.
They were going there on vacation, and they retired to St. John and decided that they would spend, you know, maybe 5 years there or so.
Mm-hmm.
And they hit the 5-year mark, and, you know, okay, it's time to figure out our next step. And
mm-hmm.
so they were, you know, they were thinking about options, and they were listing a variety of places that they might move to. And
mm-hmm.
I, you know, I kind of said, yeah, you're going to end up in Richmond eventually.
Mm-hmm.
You may as well go ahead and come now. And so they did. And I, you know, I think there are times when they wish they hadn't left St. John so early, but, you know, they find what interests them and they do it.
They grab the bull by the horns.
They really
did.
Yeah, they really did.
That's really neat.
And it's great having them here.
Yeah.
It's great having them here.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think Richmond does a good job of both entertaining people who are in the retirement years, but are also getting a lot better at entertaining people in the years before retirement.
I think that's true.
Yeah.
I think we're seeing kind of a surge of young people
that
are staying, that are either staying or they're coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important.
Well, and I may have these numbers. I may just be making something up.
Go ahead.
But there's, I think we've got more senior citizens right now than we've ever had in America.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that are millennial to Generation X, which that's kind of two in one.
It's kind of two. Yeah.
But it's almost like there are more people above 65 and more people that are 18 to 35.
Mm-hmm.
Then those two segments are bigger than they've ever been,
I think.
And so that's an interesting point that you bring up, that if you can take care of both ends of that spectrum,
mm-hmm.
you'll kind of meet in the middle.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah. What do you think we're doing well for millennials right now?
Well, I think the bike path
mm-hmm.
project that's being instituted in downtown Richmond is a fantastic idea to connect the Depot District to the heart of old downtown, to the downtown portion of the city, I think is a great idea. I think we're seeing that millennials are interested in different things that me and my middle 40s are interested in. You know, they're interested in more hands-on experiences. They're interested in, not that I'm a beer drinker, but this is an easy example. They're interested in craft beers mm-hmm. instead of drinking a Red, White, and Blue or mm-hmm. a Budweiser or whatever. Mm-hmm. And these are things that no one really talked about when I was that age. Mm-hmm. So I think that the millennial generation has figured out, it seems like they're more detail-oriented when it comes to things that interest them in a pastime. Mm-hmm. Whereas maybe previous generations kind of followed the leader a little bit. Mm-hmm. It seems like there's a lot more individuality, I think, mm-hmm. to the millennials than other generations, I think.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it could be a timing issue, because I think Richmond has been in kind of a transition mm-hmm. in terms of focus and just the need to kind of renew our infrastructure. And at the same time, we've had a group of younger professionals kind of land in Richmond and find a Richmond that was ready to be molded. So mm-hmm. they're actually able to be directly involved in some of that transition, and they're being given those opportunities. Mm-hmm. And so with them having a say in what Richmond is about to look like mm-hmm. gives them that feeling of having an investment mm-hmm. in the community that hopefully will help them desire to stay here long term. Yeah. So I just, a lot of it might be timing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems to be going well. Well, I appreciate both of you joining me, and it was great to hear about your adventures, and I love Diva. That's just a great idea, and I think it's such a Richmond thing to do in the best uh-huh. way I can mean. I mean, it's just a really cool, welcoming thing to do for the community, so I love it. So great. Thank you for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Absolutely. We appreciate what you all do for Richmond.
Thank you.
Thank you.